We go out back to the hotline, North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. We welcome in Howard Beck, who it's great to talk to, real news reporters, real news breakers, because we know what happened yesterday at the Combine in Indy. Howard, you seem too even keel to get into any kind of fights with other reporters. Although, if you want to, we have Tom Withers in here now.
Tom is maybe in the bottom 1% of people in the business who I would want to fight. Not because I fear him, but because he's just such a great dude. Why would I ever want to be in a fight with Tom Withers?
Hey, thanks, Tom. H. I love you, man.
You too, man.
Yeah, Howard, great to catch up with you again. We've had a whole season elapse and an unbelievably remarkable regular season for the Cavs, and we're getting ready for tonight's Celtics-Cavs showdown. Not sure what kind of a showdown it'll be, depending on who's going to be available for the Celtics tonight, but just as a litmus test type thing, you cover a lot of regular season games where players go through the motions, load management. How big is tonight for Kenny Atkinson and Joe Mazzulla?
There's two answers on this one because of, well, a couple of different factors. So the first answer is when teams downplay this, they're always lying. Every single one of them. Every player, every coach, whoever says, it's just another game, it's never just another game. They know it. And then it'll be like the next day or 2 weeks later or months later or years later in a documentary or something, it'll be like, oh, yeah, it was a really big game. We got up. Anyway, if they say it's not a big deal, they're lying. The thing is, like, at this stage of the season, both these teams are very well established. And look, the Celtics are defending champs, as we know. The Cavaliers are, you know, by far the biggest threat to them in the East now, maybe, period. And so, to an extent, it's still a measuring stick, but the Cavaliers have been so dominant and are on, you know, such a killer pace this season. There's a part of me that thinks that, do they really need this as a gauge? Do they really need to send a message in late February? I'm not sure if they do. Like, it still matters, but I also feel like, you know, whatever happens tonight, we're still going to be going, okay, well, let's see what happens in whenever they're going to meet, probably May, right? Like, we're expecting this is the conference finals matchup. Can the Cavs beat them 4 out of 7? Will tonight give us the answer to that? No. Maybe it gives us some clues. And again, as you say, it depends on who's playing. But it's exciting nonetheless. It's exciting nonetheless when you have a team emerge the way the Cavaliers have as an absolute power in the East, as a true contender, as a team that on the face of it you look at and you could make the case for why they could knock out the Celtics. Like, that's exciting because once the Celtics won last year, I think we looked around and said, I'm not sure if anybody's up to the task, and now we know.
Howard, the last couple of years we've talked in Cleveland about the need for that big wing defender, somebody that's going to take on Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and the Cavs did that with the move for DeAndre Hunter. What are your thoughts on his acquisition and the way he's kind of somewhat seamlessly blended in here so far?
I mean, I think I had some doubts. I mean, I loved the pickup, and when I talked to people around the league at the time of the trade, I got a little bit more of a mixed result than I thought I would. I mean, I think people like DeAndre Hunter, and I think they like the fit in concept, in the abstract. But there's always a little bit of a risk. You know, the Cavaliers, it's not just that they've been dominant offensively, dominant defensively, having a great season, all this stuff. Kenny Atkinson comes in and unlocks some things. Like, at some point, it's like you're also kind of cruising on good vibes, you know, in addition to talent and all this. And it's risky pulling two rotation players out of that and adding in somebody from the outside, especially when one of those guys was somebody who'd been playing for Kenny, you know, for years going back to Brooklyn. So that the familiarity, I think, mattered some. So plugging in Hunter, you just don't know how it's going to go. I thought skill set wise, and you know, he's a role player. It's not like you're having to try to accommodate a star who needs, you know, 18, 20 shots a game. I thought it should be seamless. I think it's been even more so than could have anticipated. I think there were also some people around the league who felt like the idea of DeAndre Hunter had been passed by the actual performance of DeAndre Hunter during his years in Atlanta, where it was like, yeah, big 3-and-D wing. And I think people were off of him a little bit, like, maybe he's not quite as, especially on the defensive side of it. They weren't convinced that he was ever going to reach the heights that they had hoped. But on the Cavs, you can be the best version of yourself because you've got such great defense around you and behind you in particular. I think it allows anybody plugged into that position to be the absolute best version of themselves.
Howard Beck from The Ringer, and I was excited to pull up The Ringer's most recent top 100, and we've been talking about it all morning, that this is really as high, I think, as Donovan Mitchell has been maybe in his entire career, all the way up to number 8, Howard. Is that the case that he now is looking like, it's probably where Tatum was at this time last year, that if he's the best player in the Cavs this year, we were worried about that, now not worried at all, like that's a good spot to be in?
I'll just put out as a disclaimer, I can take neither credit nor blame for the rankings because I'm not a participant in those rankings.
Wait, Howard, hold on. We need to stop you right there. Yep. You are one of the, can I say senior writer
foremost,
without not being disparaging about age or anything like that? Who has seen more than you, and yet they're not going to let you in on the top 100? Shameful.
I don't have any desire to be part of it. I have no desire to be ranking players.
Right, but Donovan at 8, Howard, I mean,
they haven't asked, but I wouldn't. But I would also like not want it. No, Donovan 8 is remarkable. And I noticed, by the way, as soon as they published the rankings yesterday, and I knew that they were working on the latest update, when it came out, I pulled it up, and the first thing I said to was, wow, that's a big leap. I don't know. I haven't looked at the history of it, how high he's been in the Ringer rankings. But Donovan at 8 is something. It's meaningful. And the respect that my colleagues who do the rankings showed him, it speaks for itself. I think that he's reached that stage, right? Donovan Mitchell is 28 years old. I always use, it's a great reference point, I think, and especially for the farther we get from it, for younger viewers, listeners, fans, the 2007-08 Celtics, by the way, Celtic City, great documentary produced by The Ringer that's coming to Max next week. Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, when they come together in 2007, they're all at that stage, right? Like late 20s, they've all done great things individually. They've gotten their awards. They've gotten their scoring titles or whatever they've gotten. And they've had their individual glory and no success when it comes to the postseason and on the teams that they were on. We talk about, you know, there was the Ubuntu, the word they used about everybody kind of pulling for each other and the way that team came together. It's because they were ready to do that. They were ready to sacrifice. They were ready to be more team focused. I'm not saying Donovan Mitchell hasn't been earlier in his career, but everybody goes on a natural kind of learning curve when you're a supreme talent in the NBA whose role is that of both ball handler and scorer, and you're always having to find the right balance. And sometimes find the right teammates, too, find the right fit. And at some point, you figure out the ideal approach to elevating your teammates, scoring yourself because you've got, you know, the most talent to do so. And Donovan Mitchell, I've never heard anything but great things about him in terms of as a character guy anyway, right? Like, you know, whether in Utah or Cleveland. But still, sometimes it just takes to get, you know, getting to the right point where things click into place. And you guys know, because we've talked about it on this show in the past, after they got Mitchell, I was never sure if the Garland-Mitchell backcourt made sense long-term. I thought, you know, undersized backcourt, two guys who both handle the ball a lot, how are they going to find the balance? Is this going to just be a my turn, your turn thing? But I think that's part of, you know, it's a credit to Donovan and Darius, but also to Kenny Atkinson for coming in and innovating the offense in a way that allows everybody to shine and that gives each of these guys their time, separating them at times in the game and creating more dynamism where everybody's effective and it doesn't just become the Donovan Mitchell show or just the Darius Garland show. And it is, I don't know if it's statistically Donovan Mitchell's best season, but I mean, with the way things are going in terms of the way his team is succeeding, it's going to be considered his best.
I was just going to ask you about that, Howard. You mentioned before Kenny Atkinson's ability to unlock some things on the Cavs here. In your mind, is that the biggest thing so far? Is that what you've seen is that he's been able to figure out a way to play Darius and Donovan together? And then along with that, you know, Kenny seemed to be on kind of this, you know, his career as well as anybody. His career seemed to be on the kind of the same trajectory, if you will, of this young Cavs team, kind of ascending at the same time together. Can you just talk on those two spots?
Yeah, I mean, I met Kenny when he was on Mike D'Antoni's staff coaching the Knicks, which now feels like a very long time ago, speaking of being a senior writer. And Kenny was the guy who, if you guys recall, when Linsanity happened, Jeremy Lin kept shouting out Kenny because that was, he was, you know, he was like a development coach, he's a younger coach, he's the guy who's on the court with Jeremy pregame every game, like Kenny working up a sweat, just busting his butt out there, whether it was, you know, rebounding or playing defense in front of Jeremy to, you know, while Jeremy's practicing his, you know, just doing his pregame shooting routine. And then I, you know, Kenny comes back again to, you know, I'm in New York, obviously. He, you know, head coach of the Nets, his first, you know, opportunity there. And, you know, those teams, and this is much credit to Kenny, those were like just a 2-3 years of continually overachieving. The Nets had no picks. There was no incentive to tank. But they still were going to be really bad. That was, you know, after the Pierce Garnett thing had crashed and burned. They had no talent. They had no picks. And they just kept overachieving with, you know, guys like Spencer Dinwiddie, D'Angelo Russell, you know, Joe Harris, of course, Caris LeVert and Jared Allen. And I think Kenny really made his mark with those teams and showed what he can do. Like, he has a way of connecting with players. As you guys know, like, he's just a really easygoing personality. He's got an intensity to him as a competitor, as a coach, but he's just very easy to talk to. And he also spent time under Mike D'Antoni, obviously one of the great offensive innovators in the NBA. He spent time, obviously, with the Warriors and Steve Kerr. And so the best-case scenario, and Kenny was my preseason pick. Granted, I've known him a while, so maybe there's a little bit of personal bias here, but he was my preseason pick for Coach of the Year because I thought he could come in with his approach to offense and unlock some things. And that's that has come to pass. Now he's in, amazingly, this crazy, I think, two-person battle for Coach of the Year with J.B. Bickerstaff, who, of course, the Cavaliers fired, and who went to Detroit and is doing as much or even potentially a more impressive job with the Pistons. Don't ask me what my ballot is. I've got 2 months to figure it out.
Well, one final question, Howard. We appreciate you taking the time from the Ringer. Howard, can we dare to dream about a LeBron and Lakers finals matchup with the Cavs? How crazy is that?
That would be amazing. That would be awesome. I'm a bit skeptical of that. I know the Lakers have surged of late. I know that Luka is starting to find himself there, although his shooting isn't quite there yet. From the moment of that trade, I thought, great long-term trade for the Lakers, duh. Like, you know, not a difficult one to figure out there. But I thought in the short term they might have actually gotten worse because not having Anthony Davis, even losing Max Christie as a, you know, a wing defender, they just don't have a lot defense in terms of defense. They don't have a lot of size. And LeBron and Luka, sure, they could both play defense, but LeBron's 40 and Luka is not really interested in defense for most of his career. I just don't know how long they can sustain this and whether they can take 4 of 7 from some of the better teams in the West, and certainly from the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are younger, deeper, spryer. I mean, it's hard to dismiss them right now, I will admit. I'm still skeptical of the Lakers in the abstract, or just, you know, the basic construction of their roster. I think they need time to retool around Luka in the season, but you know, like, after the Thunder, there is no clear second best team in the Western Conference. So that means there's at least the possibility of it. But as we sit here today, I still think it's the Thunder coming out of the West.
No, you said possibility. Howard, we're going to keep that. We're going to stay on that. We're going to make that the headline.
Okay. Well, that's, I mean, we live in the age of aggregation and headlines that completely distort the intent of anybody's quotes or reporting. So, sure, why not? Yeah, go all Legion Hoops on me.
I love it. Oh, and NBA Centel. Thank you, Howard. Appreciate it.
Take care, guys.
There he is. Howard Beck from the Ringer on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Plenty to react to there with the Cavs and the Celtics battling tonight. A game that even he said, listen, if anybody downplays it, they are lying. Starting to get some reaction from the combine, from the quarterbacks. We know that Shedeur Sanders wasn't going to participate in any of the throwing or the drills. Cam Ward, right now, Mitch, you say also not participating in any of the drills. However, some sound coming in, and your Browns are being referenced because people are obviously asking about the teams at the top of the draft. So we had this interesting right before the break. I was informed that Jackson Dart was one of those Ole Miss quarterback who I gave up on after I saw him in the Florida game last year. I don't know if you guys remember that game. Ole Miss was fighting for their playoff lives. And in the fourth quarter, I think he threw two official interceptions, whether the game was tied or down seven. And then he threw two other unofficial interceptions that were either ruled out of bounds or incomplete, or there was a penalty on the play. He was a total disaster. And you know how you just watch one game and you're like, that's it.
Good night.
By the way, I would have said the same thing after Will Howard's Michigan game.
Yeah. It seems like Dart is the guy that seems to be climbing a little bit, right? Almost like the J.J. McCarthy of last year where, okay, second, third round. Now suddenly people are talking about him as a potentially a first-round pick. So this is going to – listen, this is what we're going to have to live for the next 2 months, right? This is going to be up and down. Shadur one day, Cam the next, punt. I mean, it's going to be
no,
all –
No, we're not taking a punter, are we?
It's going to be all over the map.
We've taken a kicker. We're not taking a punter. Well, Tom Withers is in for Kent Carman today. Not only the fact that, you know, Jackson Dart, the Browns are sitting there with the number one pick in the second round. That is what makes it really interesting, because if they don't take a quarterback at the top, don't you kind of feel like they're almost assuredly going to either take one at 33, which would be the first pick of the second round, or trade up to the end of the first round, similarly to what the Ravens did to go get Lamar Jackson. Right? Because you can't just hope a guy gets to you to that next day.
No, which is why I'm going to go back to what I said earlier. I think at number two, the Browns are locked into taking a quarterback, either Ward or Sanders. I think they have to.
Okay. Tom Withers is on record.
There you go.
Well, we do have Jackson Dart on record when it comes to the Cleveland Browns situation. Listen to what he says here and let me know if you think this is the same way Myles Garrett's thinking. Go ahead.
They've been great. Being able to sit down with them, have those visits, and really just chop it up. They have a ton of talent, and I think that they're a team that's really going to have a ton of success in these next coming years. I think they're built for success now.
Built for success now.
Mr. Garrett.
Well, right. I can't find a lot of Browns fans that think that right now, because it's been the week from hell. We've had like a month from hell when it comes to them and their offseason situation. Now, obviously, the young quarterbacks, they want to talk their way up, especially if you're not going to be taking, you know, number one, number two, or number three overall. Like, you're ready to go anywhere. You don't care. And oftentimes what happens, as you know, Tom, is that some will tell you, like, honestly, for your career, might be better off not getting taken at the top of the draft, because what kind of teams are drafting at the top?
Bad ones, yeah.
As opposed to, you know, Patrick Mahomes goes into the all-time situation.
It's all about situation.
Jordan Love goes into an all-time great situation. When you go to a team that doesn't have the urgency to and the desperation to take a quarterback at the top and play that quarterback right away. And now it's still very much to debate whether or not whoever the Browns take, even at number two overall, whether or not they're going to play week one in September. Who knows? There'll always be pressure from the fans and people like me, the media, because we want to see these guys. I remember the Baker stuff like it was yesterday. I was getting in fights with people about whether to play Baker or Tyrod Taylor. Mm. And I'm like, let's just go. What are we waiting for? Now, we know
he's only four games in, right, when he took over.
And one of the more memorable moments of my recent Browns fandom with the opening of the victory fridges.
There you go.
Which, by the way, Ken got a victory fridge. Are you compromised? Did you get a victory fridge? You couldn't be a journalist and get a victory fridge, right?
God, no.
Yeah, Ken got one. I think Ken got two.
Tells you a lot about his thoughts on the team.
Yeah, what does that tell you? We have other quarterbacks that are talking as we speak. In fact, Cam Ward. Could he be there at number two overall for the Cleveland Browns? You've heard some people say Abdul Carter could be the generational talent that the Tennessee Titans take at number one. Here's Cam Ward being asked about his discussion with the Cleveland Browns.
Real good. Being able to meet with the GM, finally meet the quarterbacks coach in person, the OC as well. They do an unbelievable job on offense, getting people open. They got an unbelievable offensive line. Jerry Jeudy's one of the best receivers in the league. So, you know, if I'm hoping to go there, I know it'll work out good.
But how big, the way people are talking about Jerry Jeudy, how big was his season? As bad as the Browns in their three-win season was, Jerry Jeudy, all of a sudden, you want to talk about having a rebirth, revitalized career. You got guys talking about Jeudy again the way he was talked about when he came out in the draft.
And one of the positives on the Andrew Berry ledger, right? That's a check on the right side of the box.
You said positives. Where are their other positives? I guess trading for, the one thing he's been good at, trading two out of three.
Amari Cooper.
Yeah, Amari Cooper worked out. Now, Elijah Moore has not worked out at all.
Right.
So 2 out of 3, though, ain't bad. And Jerry Jeudy certainly came on. And to hear Ward talk about that, like, you do like that these guys are up on these teams, right? They're definitely schooled on how to talk to these reporters from the hometowns.
No question. Hey, and if we can lock into Cam Ward for 1 second. So one of my good AP colleague buddies, Tim Reynolds, who I think you've had on the show in the past, down in Miami. I kind of focused on Cam during a lot of last year's college football season. And in talking to Tim, he says Cam is everything you see on and off the field. Real high, we talked about character before, high character guy, plays at a high level, very athletic, obviously. Tried to play some hero ball maybe at times that got him into a little bit of trouble, but had a good year with Miami. With, you know, not, he's got some good talent down there too. They have a really good tight end, a couple of nice wide receivers as well. So listen, as I said to you earlier, I think the Browns need to fall in love with one of these top two quarterbacks and just go.
Did it bother you at all? Because we definitely had a conversation about it the day after the Pop-Tart Bowl. Was it that
didn't play in the bowl
Cam
game?
Ward disappearing act after halftime?
No, not whatsoever. I mean, these guys got to look out for their future, right? And I think those bowl games have turned into what they are now, right? Especially with the college football, you know, system. If you're not in the playoff system, if you're not in the playoffs, then in my mind, you can do whatever you want to.
But it was the Pop-Tart Bowl.
Well, you can't, that's the exception.
But sacrilegious. I mean, it's up there. It's the Masters, right? It's the Indy 500, the Rose Bowl. And come on, you can't dodge the Pop-Tart Bowl. That was an all-time great 3.5 hours of television, and I was hooked. People say the bowl games are dead. I was hooked to that one. But, you know, I think what concerns some fans is that if you are not Andrew Luck, in terms of a prospect coming out, if you are not Trevor Lawrence, people don't want to find reasons to dock you. And, you know, Cam and Shador, you keep hearing, hey, if this were last year, Bo Nix, and this is where they would be taken. And yet, man, Cam Ward doesn't play in that second half. It's just another reason for a Browns fan who's already on the fence.
We're going to nitpick these guys apart, right, between now and whenever he's taken. I've seen enough good things about Shador as well. You know, I liked his completion percentage last year. I think he completed 73% of his passes at Colorado. Granted, their schedule wasn't, you know, maybe the toughest in the country, but I like a lot of what I've seen out of him. I know a lot of people are worried about the Deion factor. I don't necessarily think that's going to be a big deal.
He's going to be coaching.
That's
the one thing I don't understand. What do people think he's going to do?
Well, and not only that, he wants his son to go out and be him. I mean, if Deion knows locker rooms better than you and I ever will, right, in the NFL, and I think he knows that he can't be daddy looking over his son's shoulder in the NFL. You got to just let him go out and make his mistakes and do what he's got to do. So I like either one of these guys. I think either of them are legitimate potential, you know, number two picks overall. No question in my mind.
I was just assuming Cam Ward was not going to be there at number one or number two for us all along. It's silly season time, so you're hearing
Carter and Hunter and whatever.
Yeah, you're hearing a lot about how this may shake out. Jack and Lorraine, he's got a strategy. Go ahead, Jack. Tell me what the Browns should
Thanks for taking my call. This might sound like overkill, but what I'm hoping that they do is, one, in free agency, get a veteran, so that they can start the season with a veteran. And then in the draft, if they can get Cam or Shador with pick two, and then maybe in around 4 or 5, take either I know I'm saying his name wrong, or
from Louisville?
Louisville, yeah.
Louisville. Or Rourke from Indiana, and then have those two rookies in camp, and then let that be, you know, probably the quarterback room for the season.
All right, thank you, Jack. Now, he didn't say Will Howard. At least I didn't think I heard him say Will Howard. Will Howard also at the podium just moments ago. We're getting ready to hear from Shador Sanders, so if we can turn that around fast enough once he gets up to the podium, or you'll hear about it on Baskin and Phelps. But here's Will Howard, national champion Buckeye quarterback.
can be that guy for a team. I truly believe that. You know, I think I showed it as the season went on this year. You know, it's not always going to be perfect. And, you know, I think I was able to show, you know, through the times of adversity and bouncing back from that, that I was able to, you know, not let things get to me. You know, I was able to make elite throws and make decisions when the lights were the brightest. You know, I just hope that there's a team out there that, you know, falls in love with me. And, you know, I still have that chip on my shoulder, man. I'm always going to have that. You know, I love being kind of the underdog and kind of coming from behind. And I think that's, you know, that's where I thrive and where I want
to
be.
I would like to thank Ashley Bastock and her social media account for us to be able to play that audio from Indy and these quarterbacks all getting those same types of questions. Tom Withers, who are a Buckeye alum, correct?
Correct.
And would you classify yourself as a diehard or still very, very passionate observer of the Buckeyes?
Diehard. It's the one team I can root for without, you know. Don't cover them, so there's no conflict of interest.
Well,
so.
What did that run for you? Forget about legacy on a college level. He's a national champion now. Craig Krenzel was a national champion. Cardale Jones, national champion. You think about what it did for them and how we feel about them in the Buckeye State. Forget about all that, because we know how he's the rest of his life. He's good now. You know, Kansas State, whatever. I mean, he's a Buckeye. Won a national championship with Ohio State. What about the NFL? Because his stock was, they were saying day three after that Michigan game, they were saying Kyle McCord, much higher draft stock. Things have kind of shifted in that regard.
Has anybody this side of Joe Flacco had a better four-game stretch than Will Howard had in the college playoffs?
I mean, great question.
It was unbelievable, right? Made the big throws, didn't make mistakes. I mean, there was times during the year, Anthony, I know you watch the Buckeyes as religiously as I do. He would make one or two really bad throws a game, right? Force balls into traffic, whatever the case may be. He didn't do any of that. Now, granted, it's nice to have Ibuka and Jeremiah Smith as your targets and to have a running game like they had, especially in the playoffs. But yeah, Will Howard made himself a ton of money. You know, I've heard people talk that he could even be a late first round, early second round pick. So, his stock is rising, and I think it will continue to. He'll be impressive in any workouts that he does. He's got the size. He's shown he's got the smarts. He's got the big arm. It's not Kyle McCord's arm, another guy that we probably should talk about in terms of what the caller mentioned earlier about the Browns taking a guy maybe third, fourth, or fifth rounds. And I'm with that line of thinking, by the way, as well. I'm with whether you get your starting quarterback for this season through free agency or a trade, then I think you got to take a quarterback in number two. Then I think you got to fill out that room with another guy on top of DTR.
What's crazy is the amount of fans, especially I'm sure Ohio State fans or people that watch their run in the playoffs. They're like, well, wait a second. He's 6'4". He's mobile. He can escape the pocket. He can kind of bulldoze. You want to talk about another guy that could do, if he can get down low enough, could do a tush push if it's still legal in the NFL. Like, Will Howard's going to get you a yard if you need a yard. The chip on the shoulder thing, how is putting all that together, how is that not a guy that's a first round quarterback? And to that, I can only say he had played before this season. He had played 34 games at Kansas State and people thought he was going to be undrafted. So there's enough tape out there. They're worried about his arm. They just don't think his arm is good enough. But man, on those deep throws, he might have underthrown a few of them in the playoff run, but they were accurate.
He was on the money. He was terrific. And to your point, I mean, he played in the Big 12, played in the Big 10. Sounds like a lot of the Josh Allen characteristics that you just talked about, right?
Josh Allen comparison.
I'm not saying he's Josh Allen, and I know the arm strength is not there, but in terms of size, in terms of resume, all those kinds of things. This is a guy that you cannot overlook.
All right. Welcome back. You're going to hear from Shador Sanders coming up in moments. Tom Withers, final segment of the show. Baskin and Phelps will have plenty of audio from the quarterbacks at the Combine. We played some Cam Ward, some Will Howard, some Jackson Dart. Coming up, Shador Sanders, who could be future Cleveland Browns quarterback. But I want to get this in. We have a trailer from a brand new show premiering Wednesday, March 19th at 9, 8 Central. A&E announces their new series, Stadium Lockup. And who does it star? But you, the fans of the Cleveland Browns.
From every corner of Cleveland Stadium, A security force of nearly 1,000 is on high alert to keep fans safe.
Please respond to Section 135.
Medical coming through.
We need police on that.
I'm trying to break it up.
You're working on getting arrested.
We're going to show you to the gate. There's no refunds.
That guy just balled. Holy man.
Stadium Lockup. New series premieres Wednesday, March 19th at 9, only on AME.
All right, now there were some ghastly sounds during that, and Mitch is dumping audio in that we want to turn around ASAP because I want to. It was one thing to hear it, but we are a radio show. I wish I could see what was going on because there was anguish in there.
So that's real. That's not a spoof. This is a thing.
This is a real
thing. This is not
thing.
The SNL 50 no, new no. skit. Okay.
No, this is real. I'm reading about the show here in their press release about keeping everybody safe during game time. Protecting the thousands of fans visiting the stadium on game days is a highly trained force of nearly 1,000 brave and dedicated men and women from law enforcement, multiple private security agencies, as well as the medics with a nearby hospital. All fans purchasing a ticket agree to abide by the stadium's strict code of conduct and agree to being recorded, but often with tensions running high on and off the field. Security team is faced with a multitude of issues. This series, the one we've all been asking for, Tom, this series provides unprecedented access to the stadium's command center. I've always wanted to be embedded on game day into the command center. You know, we've always heard, Tom, about the jails, you know, in the bowels of these stadiums.
Yeah.
I don't know if they all have them, like the Eagles, it's kind of famous. That, you know, the fans that get in fisticuffs, they end up going down there. And it really ruins your week, your month, if you get too drunk and you get into a
your
fight.
Your life, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, guys...
Oh, I know.
Seems like when guys fight now, somebody face plants and their life is ruined. Like, this is really bad to get in fights, especially at a sporting event. I guess I'll give this a try.
I guess so, too.
Any of my friends make a cameo?
Does the NFL or do the Browns really want to reveal this underbelly, though? Like, this is not good in my mind. I mean, it's just going to show, it's going to expose all the bad stuff that some of us see behind the scenes on NFL Thursday night or a Sunday afternoon, which is drunkards fighting and falling down the ramps and all kinds of nonsense.
You know, you watch, it's amazing. I watch some English Premier League only because my sister and her boyfriend in Chicago, they took me to the Liverpool bar and we watch it. And now I'm not talking about the soccer in other countries where there are fights and cages and crazy stuff goes down and bleachers fall apart. But in the EPL, when I see them, everybody's sitting in their seat. No alcohol.
You can't take a drink to your seat.
Yeah, nobody gets up.
Correct.
Everybody's wearing, they don't wear all the gear. They're wearing their jackets because it's, you know, it's kind of that weather.
Yeah.
Everybody's wearing black and everybody is, there's not a seat open. Nope. It's very different from what an NFL game looks like on a Sunday, especially up in the 500 level, especially in early September when it's 90 degrees in the sun. It's a rough one.
Sounds like fun, though.
I used to do it a lot. And I told you, we had some Browns home opener extravaganzas where in the second half, I was, one year I was at the police headquarters and another year I was in the ER with a buddy.
Oh, boy.
Who got crushed. He got cracked in the muni lot. So we never, there are times my buddy's never even made it to the game. Now is your chance to be on reality TV. You could be on cable TV. So I look forward to that. If you think you're going to be starring in this, reach out to our producer, Mitch. We want to hear your side of the story. So we're also tracking down Shedeur Sanders' audio. So obviously these quarterbacks all being asked about the Browns and do they want to steer their way to one city or the next. But Shedeur Sanders at the Combine said this moments ago.
If you ain't trying to change the franchise or the culture, don't give me. So you should know history repeats itself over and over and over. And I've done it over and over and over, so it should be no question why an NFL franchise should pick him.
He's cutting a promo. He sounds like Dion. He's kind of, if you heard him.
He's going to change the culture? Is that what he's saying? If you want to change the culture?
He's saying he's the guy to do it, right, Owen?
He's saying if you don't plan on an immediate culture change now, then don't even worry about drafting me because, I mean, that is. It's his father reincarnated
that was
there.
Prime time.
And remember, when he made the move, transferred to Colorado, there was talk about playing certain songs when he scored touchdowns and not the band playing, you know, the fight song.
Oh, my God.
It's kind of a big deal in college. He's always talking about the watches, and, you know, we went through that with Odell. I think there's a, definitely a segment of our fan base that'll hear that, that are like, I'm out.
Yeah.
I am out. But what do you think your GM thinks? What do you think your coach thinks when they hear someone like that talk as confidently about how he's going to seize control of a locker room? We've wondered where the leadership is going to be with the Cleveland Browns over the last few years. We're wondering, are we going to get it from Deshaun? No. Were we going to get it from Miles? You've been in that locker room.
Yeah, you know what underscored things for me last year, you guys, from the leadership standpoint, was that Jameis Winston walked into the building and instantaneously became one of the leaders of the team, which I thought was pretty jarring when you think about
That's
it, right?
A
complete outsider came in. You know, yeah, Miles exudes some of those leadership qualities. Obviously, he leads by example on the field. They need somebody else, though. They need that, if you will, face of the franchise. And listen, Sanders says all the right things. Again, I've said before, I like his game to a degree, and I have no problem with him at number two.
Well, Shedeur Sanders also had this to say.
I've been through six different OCs, you know, so I'm able to adjust to any offense in every scheme and make it work. We went from Jackson State to Colorado and changed two programs back to back. So you don't think I could come to an NFL franchise and change a program again?
You know, it's like I love the confidence.
The hubris, yeah.
You know, you do to play quarterback in this league.
Got to have it.
There has to be a level of confidence. You can't come in. Yeah, it felt like Brandon Whedon. Did that ever strike you as a guy that was confident, like he was going to seize control of a locker room and, you know, change the fortunes of a franchise? Never got that idea.
Baker, you felt like he could.
Baker was that guy.
And he did.
Let's be honest.
Yeah,
Baker, absolutely.
Did.
In fact, we were wondering, did he have too much of that confidence? Was that something that was, you know, going to cause some issues behind the scenes?
Doesn't it feel like you need a guy like that, though, especially to offset mild-mannered Kevin Stefanski, who is never going to be a rah-rah, you know, stand in front of me. And we've seen the post-game victory speeches. He's obviously
drops
a few F-bombs in there and all that. But the day-in, day-out, and the thing that I think a lot of people don't like about Kevin Stefanski is that he is not out there, you know, losing his mind for every play and all that.
He's not Dan Campbell or anybody else. Yeah, I got you.
Mike in Stowe, you just heard Shedeur Sanders. Do you like the confidence? Is it even cockiness? What say you?
Anthony, look, I have been begging to get on. I am not drinking this Kool-Aid. I'm going to blow this up. Look, this draft is about meat and potatoes. And you don't reach in a draft that's not giving you what you need, where you want to, where you're taking it at. We should absolutely not get a free agent quarterback, draft a guy at three or two, I'm sorry, and then draft another one in the third round. Where are we getting a left tackle? Where are we getting another linebacker?
A lot of holes.
Holy cow. None of the math makes sense, guys. Look, I'm not doing it. The way to go in this draft is to move down, get a left tackle for 10 years. There's three of them, guys. Take one of those.
It's 30
get a
years.
Quarterback in the fourth round. Go ahead, Anthony. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mike. No, I appreciate it. End of the show. Squeezed you in. Gabe Baskin and Phelps, something to think about.
It would be nice to have a left tackle for 30 straight years.
We've been looking for that for years. Fountain of youth and a left tackle for 30 years. Tom, loved having you today. Maybe we get a chance to get you back again.
I enjoyed it very much. Thanks, you guys.
I think you don't want to be making any plans, even in semi-retirement, over the next 3 months.
Well, as long as it doesn't interfere with any basketball tournaments or anything that you're involved with.
Listen, parents of fourth graders, stay off the court in Westlake. We don't need a we don't need a Westlake Rec Malice in the Palace. We don't need it. Tom Withers.
That's all good.
For Carl Dukes, a loaded show. Howard Beck, we had Mitch turning over audio at record pace. Owen for holding it down. Terrific job this week. Kenny will be back next week. I believe on Tuesday. We got Daryl on Monday. Stay tuned. Baskin and Phelps. Plenty more sound from Shedeur Sanders and the QBs in Indy. That's all straight ahead. You've been listening. 923 The Fan.